I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. Once again, I am Mike Vardy, your host, and I am really excited to have a chance to talk to Jared Brock today. Kind of wish I ran into him at the World Domination Summit this year, but didn't get a chance to make that happen. So many people, so much to do, and we just didn't manage to cross paths. I kind of touched on in the Patreon edition of the podcast kind of the reasons why the World Domination Summit is something that I attend every year. And if you're a Patreon supporter and you're listening to this episode, go to the Patreon RSS feed and grab that and then take a listen or just go to the Patreon page. If you're not a supporter, then maybe head over to patreon.com/productivityist and give it a go because you're going to get the entire interview that I have with Jared today. What I do want to touch on, though, is kind of the idea of repositioning the year and kind of eliminating so that I can really move things forward. And I'm not going to go into the details of what I'm eliminating. I kind of save that for the Patreon folks. But basically, after the World Domination Summit, it gives you that chance and the Clarity Day that I've written about and things like that. I wrote that about in my newsletter. It just gives you a chance to kind of hone in on what the excess is. And I'm not a huge believer in, I mean, minimalism is one thing, but I think, Patrick Roan's talk on enough, I think, is fine. And one of the things that John Acuff talked about at the World Dominations Summit was we have some money and then enough money. Kids say some. When you become an adult, you say enough. And I thought that was really powerful because I think that enough can work both ways. Enough can be both a kind of a detractor, so I don't have enough to do this, or, you know, I have enough. So it's a matter of your relationship with the word. And for me, there's some things that I've, you know, obviously got going on in excess that I need to pull back on. And when you go to a conference like that, it gives you pause. It says, okay, you have a chance to be with yourself, and you will take moments to yourself because, I mean, when you have 3,000 people and there's an energy level that's going on that's just so palpable, you need to step away from it so that way you can come back to it and give back. Because otherwise it can just drain you after a while. And there was about a 3-hour stretch, 3 to 4 hour stretch on the Sunday where I just took off, went back, had some lunch, had a nice nap and, you know, some thinking time. And I came away with some things, you know, like I'm going to pull back on certain things and really hone in on others. And that's what these kind of things can do. And I think we need to spend a bit more time in those moments. And I'm not suggesting a weekly review is what you should do. I'm not a big believer in that. I like the idea of a review every 2 weeks or on the 15th and 30th of every month. And I'm working on delivering a process that will help people do that without feeling like they're leaving things hanging over their heads. But I think the journaling aspect really helps for me, as well as, you know, just kind of dumping things out of my head, just that capturing. Because what it does is it allows me to kind of look at everything that's come to mind or that is around and scheduled and you know, just sitting in my task app and look at it with a more critical eye and say, you know, this is probably never going to happen, or this is something I really want to have happen but won't happen unless I get rid of these things. And You need to take that time. The summer is a great time to do that, by the way. In my mind, you know, productivity is slows down in the summer generally because of holidays and all that. So this would be a time of year to kind of take a look at it. And that's kind of why the World Domination Summit is so important to me, is because it gives me that mid-year break. I mean, the travel time to and from Portland, I take a bus. It's a 7-hour bus ride from Vancouver to Portland. And I get a lot of thinking time in there. I get a lot of stuff done. And, you know, I mean, I think that 14 hours of travel, and let's even truncate it down to 10 with stops and stuff, that's pretty valuable because there's no one that can really bother me. I mean, I can use Wi-Fi if I want. There's Wi-Fi on the bus, but I really get some really good thinking done. And I can now come back and go forward in the right direction because, you know, anybody can fall off the path and all of a sudden have to course correct. So that's kind of where Jared comes in. Jared, he's been on quite the journey himself. And he talks about, you know, I mean, first off, he's cut a lot out. He's got some bare essentials. And really, that's enough. He really does exemplify that enough aspect of things. And he's driven. And I want you to listen to this interview that I had with him to kind of get a sense of who this guy is and why aspects of what he does are something that maybe we should all take a closer look at and adopt. So, and here, without further ado, is my discussion with Jared Brock here on the Productivityist podcast. I have with me Jared Brock. He is an author, a filmmaker. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. He reached out to me, and he's from where I'm from originally, like my neck of the woods. Not literally, because you're in the woods right now. But Jared, thanks for joining me on the Productivityist podcast.
Mike, thanks so much for having me. And it's probably good to know that I've also lived on Vancouver Island. So we've been neighbors on two halves of the continent.
Where did you live on Vancouver Island?
I was in Drunken Duncan, just north of you.
Yeah, not very far at all. So yeah, I'm originally, as most of the listeners know, I'm originally from the Hamilton area. But I actually spent my high school years in a town called Waterdown, which is, you know, again, it's technically part of the Hamilton area, but it's in a community called Flamborough. That's kind of what they call it. Flamborough Speedway is a very popular racetrack and stuff. But you're in that you're in that area right now, basically.
Yeah, my wife and I live in a 1975 Airstream trailer. It's one of those old school silver bullets. So we live there about 6 months a year, and then we're on the road traveling the other 6 months of the year.
Okay, so let's talk about the traveling stuff. Like, so you've got, I mean, some of the stuff you've done is, first off, you did the 100 Things Challenge, you and your wife. So I want to talk a little bit about that because, you know, I mean, first off, the term minimalism has kind of been overwrought, I think, in a lot of ways and overused. Tell me why you took the challenge and what the challenges were with that. And I mean, we won't even touch on the word minimalism, but let's talk about that component.
Yeah, so I first kissed my future wife in the summer of the seventh grade when we were 13 years old. And when we were 21, we were about to get engaged, and she basically said, I'll marry you under one condition. You have to let me live in a Spanish-speaking part of the world for at least half a year at some point in our marriage, because she had taken Spanish as her minor in university. So I said, okay, sure, marry me, thinking that would never happen. But 2 years later, we decided to simplify our lives drastically. We actually had a kind of a six-month gap of time before we flew to Vancouver Island to intern with one of my favorite authors. So we bought one-way tickets to Central America, and over 5 months we traveled by land transport from the Panama Canal all the way to Florida, volunteering at eco resorts and intentional communities and organic farms and stuff. So we took the 100 Things Challenge, and we got down to 88 combined items for that trip. And Mike, it was so freeing to just not be possessed by our possessions, not have to clean things, maintain things. So when we came home, we radically changed our lives, purged our belongings, and moved into a trailer.
Wow. And you managed to go back east. Now, why did you go back east? Because, I mean, let's be honest. That lifestyle is very – where you were on the island is very very – it's almost – I wouldn't say it's in fashion, but it's not unheard of.
Yeah, like, I mean – the West Coast is the best coast, as they say. The weather's far better, and it's very relaxed. We have a lot of, like, very hippie-type friends and whatnot. We've visited the island a couple times since, but just, you know, home is where your community is, and for us, we just have really strong friendships, as well as both our families in the area. So, Ontario for now, but we really see it as a base camp. We're only here 6 months a year, and then we're out and about. Michelle and I have been married for 6 years. We've already been to 40 countries, and we've road tripped through 40 American states and 10 Canadian provinces as well. So it's not like we sit still for very long.
No, and I mean, you have a lot of things that, I mean, in your email that you sent me, I mean, you're carbon neutral. You don't have an iPhone or any other cell phone of any type, which is refreshing in this day and age. you know, you're vegetarian. You know, again, that would go over really well here on the West Coast. And you've been, like you said, you've been to 40 countries. Now, what, it's interesting, and the timing of this call is pretty cool, because we're recording this in June, but this episode isn't airing until later, obviously. And one of the things, and this is for the Patreon only folks that we're getting into now. So some of the folks that are listening on Patreon are going to hear this, because it's a bit more personal stuff. So if you want to actually subscribe to the Patreon edition, just go to patreon.com/productivityist, and you'll be able to check out a full extended version of this episode of the podcast. Let's talk about your meeting with the Pope, because you talk about this in your book, A Year of Living Prayerfully, which honestly I've yet to read. but it's humorous. I love humor. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where I kind of got my start, was the humor stuff. So I'm going to have to check that out. You can get 2 free chapters. I'll put the link in the show notes, and it's available pretty much at, you know, everywhere you can. So can you, I don't want you to give away too much, but how did that, you know, like, what was that like? Like, how did, give me what you can out of that whole meeting with the Pope.
Well, like, I mean, the whole trip was crazy, you know, 37,000 miles around the world, a dozen countries, went to North Korea for New Year's, walked on hot coals, all sorts of crazy things. But yeah, meeting the Pope, honestly, Mike, we had tried every which way to meet him, phone calls, emails to the consulates, introductions galore. I even, like, got a fax number because, like, people still use that in the 21st century. Like, oh, my word. So we tried everything and nothing was working. So we actually, like, we went to Rome, and my last ditch effort was I actually mailed the Pope 3 postcards from the Vatican post office with, like, his picture on the stamp. And the postmaster, like, looked at me so funny. I was like, yes, you literally need to throw these over the wall. But we ended up, you know, like, we got the tour of town, and we're praying and we're hoping and we're working towards it, but no doors were opening. And yeah, so we visited Monte Cassino, we visited Assisi, and our last night when we were in Monte Cassino, we had a Skype voicemail at 10 p.m. on a Saturday night. It said, come to the Domo Sancta Marta at noon tomorrow. So we rushed back to Rome, and nothing's open on Sunday, and we've been traveling for months. So my wife and I actually met the Pope in jeans and yoga pants, which was kind of insane. But he's a gracious guy, so it was cool.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about the kind of stuff that you have so many irons in the fire. I mean, I look at, I mean, you're a filmmaker, you know, and the films you're working on are, you know, I mean, you're working on fighting sex trafficking, right? That's, I mean, there's some nobility obviously there. There's nobility. I mean, I'm seeing that in a lot of what you've done. How in the world are you able to juggle all of that stuff and yet be mobile all at the same time? I mean, obviously you've got your base camp back in Ontario right now, mm-hmm. but I mean, how do you manage all that?
Honestly, like, I think busyness is super overrated, and a lot of my friends think that I'm really busy, but I'm really not. Like, our pace of life is like really fun, and it's really slow. And I think the key for me is every Sunday night I sit down and I schedule the week ahead to the hour, and that includes like 4-hour periods of just like fun, like. There's nothing scheduled for it, but like I'm going to turn off the computer at 6 o'clock on Tuesday and I'm not going to turn it on till the next morning kind of thing. But I definitely batch my projects. So right now, for example, I'm working on my next book. I'm working on a novel, and I actually like rent an office co-share space. Mm-hmm. And I will go there and I'll have a room to myself, and I'll just spend 9 hours, and all I will do is I'll just block all distractions, and I'll just work for 9 hours, and I'll you know, typically pound out anywhere from 4,000 to 6,000 words in just that one day, in that one session. So batching and get rid of distractions definitely helps. Things like Facebook newsfeed eradicator have like saved my life. Like, it probably saves 10 hours a week of just like mindlessly reading articles and getting into political fights and debates, you know, like,
especially with kind of the stuff that you do. I mean,
yeah, we social see the, media related.
I mean, you see the Facebook feeds. I've had to be very, I mean, luckily there's the mute function now, mm-hmm. because I mean, there's mm-hmm. some people who are friends of mine that they talk about stuff. And I mean, this is actually an interesting thing to get into is it's not really, I mean, it's a time waster to a point, but I think a lot of people, and maybe you could speak to this, is that they talk about things on Facebook and they're very passionate about, but they don't do much about. They just figure if they talk about it on Facebook, then they've done something.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think slacktivism, it's a catch-22 because, like, you know, William Wilberforce with the abolition of the transatlantic slave trade, that only happened because stay-at-home moms and young ladies decided to talk about it, and then they decided as a culture, you know what, we're not going to buy slave sugar anymore, and they stopped having sugar in their tea, and next thing you know, black people aren't being enslaved. Like, it became an economic function, but it started with a critical mass conversation. So it kind of is both ways. Like, I think it's really smug of all of us to think that if we talk about it, we've done our part, but at some point in the process, that actually is part of the solution. So
I think I keep coming back to this thing, and I think you've probably embodied this a lot in what you're working. everything in moderation.
Yeah, definitely. I don't like extremism. I wrote a humorous book on prayer. It's never really been done before. And one thing that I found so dangerous is when people say 100% there is no God or 100% there is a God. We need to be okay with the fact that everything is faith. And anyone who takes these extreme positions, it's just so fundamentalist and so dangerous to civil society.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. I hear you there. So let's dive back into the filmmaking process. I want to hear, because each of your processes, like, you must obviously have, you've been doing this for a while. When you're trying to build this kind of, you know, body of work up, have you templated a lot of the stuff? Like, you have to these different modes that you go into? Okay, I'm in filmmaking mode now, so this is the way I treat my day, my week, whatever. I'm in book writing mode. This is that. Like, is that, how do you tackle that kind of stuff?
Well, when you're on the road filmmaking, it's pretty all-consuming. So when we were making Red Light, Green Light, which is our newest documentary, took us to 10 countries, and that is, 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. You're meeting someone new every day. You're shooting every day. You're traveling on your off days. So that's pretty all-consuming, and that's okay because you're just batching it and getting it done. And then, of course, when you tour the film, so Red Light, Green Light, we toured it to 96 cities around North America, and we ended up testifying in parliamentary committee, which is kind of like congressional committee in the States. That's all you do when you're in that season. And again, that's okay. So it's actually really funny, Mike. We knew nothing about filmmaking. Like, we're writers, obviously, and we can direct, but the actual holding of the camera, the lighting and the sound part, we knew nothing about. So we took a filmmaker friend to a film store and said, okay, pick a kit for us. So he got us all the equipment, and then he literally printed us two pages of instructions, and I just followed them for every interview. And we just turn camera on, plug lights in, adjust ISO and shutter and whatnot, use this lens for this shot, and just followed it for all 53 interviews. And it's the whole keep it simple, stupid thing, right? It's actually not as complicated if you just have a very simple process to follow and are gutsy enough to do it.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, what tools do you use to kind of keep things going? Because obviously, it's not like you whip out your iPhone and you
just... I don't own a cell phone. Yeah. I'm not really huge on tech. I have a laptop, but it's used. We don't want to contribute to conflict minerals, so we only buy refurbished laptops. Mm-hmm. But I pretty much do everything on Google Drive. Michelle and I have a Google Drive folder that we share our combined schedule. And basically, if something is tentative, it's in yellow. And then as soon as it's a go, it's in black. So that's basically how we schedule our life. And then, that's pretty much it. I don't really use any other apps
because you probably use paper, right? So you use paper for a lot of your planning. Yeah. And then, frankly, if you're blocking out your time, that's where that stuff's going, is it's just going in the calendar, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Interesting. I mean, it's funny. We talk about, have you read the book Essentialism at all by Greg McKeown?
Oh man, people keep recommending it and it's on my list, but my list also has I think I'm up to 752 books right now. It's huge.
It's just,
I read 50 books a year. It's just that the list is huge.
It's just, the thing is that you're using only what's absolutely necessary. No more, no less. And it's interesting to see that happen. So what of the 100 things? So I want to get back to the 100 things challenge. I know we're jumping in a few different places, but what was the toughest thing to kind of give up? Because isn't that's the way the challenge works, right? Is that you give up and you only have 100 things. What was the toughest thing to give up?
Yeah, to be clear, we don't still practice the 100 things challenge anymore.
But when you did.
Yeah, what we do now is we have a one-for-one policy. So if we bring something new into our house, we have to donate or recycle something else. Right. So that's been super helpful. You don't buy a new pair of socks until you donate or recycle an old pair because you actually have holes in them. So that's been really helpful. But, that's a good question. Possessions, we just – after doing that trip, there was nothing – if everything I owned – was lost in a fire tomorrow, the only thing that I would mourn the passing of would be childhood photos, family, like the like albums, which we have backed up anyways. So like they're actually really, if I lost everything tomorrow, it's, I'm okay with it because possessions just don't possess me anymore. I just don't worry about them. Like, I guess manuscripts would be the big one, right? Like projects I'm working on, that would be terrible, obviously. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I mean, I wrote my book, A Year of Living Prayerfully. I wrote the entire thing on Google Drive. I wrote the 113,000 word first draft in 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Wow. And it's been out since March, right?
Yeah, it came out in March. Reviews have been amazing. What's cool is that even people who like aren't of faith or like have religion have really, really liked the book because, again, it is humorous. So, you know, the first thing we do is we celebrate Passover with ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews in Brooklyn, and I'm like dancing around a pulpit with a bunch of rabbis. And then, like, I end up on Mount Athos, like this all-dudes holy mountain in Greece. And then I'm at a nudist church, and I walk across a bed of hot coals. So, yeah, it's, the reviews have been great, which is super cool. Yeah, first-time author. It's, like, really exciting. And we actually started a second nonprofit that owns the book, so I'm donating all my author royalties to charity.
Oh, wow.
So we're really, so we're really hoping that it does a double good in the world, that it will encourage people to, like, explore spirituality and prayer, but then also that we can give to people in need.
Have you ever read, just as a sidebar, have you read A.J. Jacobs' A Year of Living Biblically?
Yeah, I actually got AJ's permission to draft off of his title.
Oh, okay.
And he's a really great guy.
Yeah, he's a super guy. I've had a chance to chat with him and hang out with him on a couple of occasions.
Yeah, so he that book's about 9 years old, where basically he literally lives the Old Testament. So aside from the title, our books diverge very greatly, aside from the fact that I took a year to basically traipse 59,000 kilometers around the globe.
right. Yeah, they're very different. I mean, I would imagine they're very different books because, yeah, like you said, he basically lives, he acts as a literalist. And I think that was his idea, was he took the Bible and said, if I lived this in the literalist sense, this is what would happen.
Whereas, which of course is not how the Bible is meant to be written.
No.
Like even Genesis 1 verse 1, it's the creation poem. It's not the creation history account, right? Like it's this beautiful flowing poetry. So yeah, it's hilarious. His book's great. And my goal the whole time was to make my book funnier than AJ's. So jury's out on that one. We'll see.
So you're working on another book. You're working on what else do you have coming up? Because I'd like our listeners to be able to check out what you've got going on.
Well, the charity, it's called Hope for the Sold. We're in the midst of relaunching the website. It's happening next week, actually. We use a great web designer who actually does he calls it website in a day. His process, we just batch the whole thing into 48 hours and just crush it out. We're on the phone basically 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. 2 days in a row, and it's done. So that's brilliant. So the website's coming up. We're going to be launching a podcast on social justice in the fall. Obviously working on my next manuscript, getting the DVD out on. Getting Red Light Green Light out on DVD and iTunes, etc. And then, basically just like prepping for winter in Germany and fundraising for our next documentary.
Awesome. Well, Jared, I mean, you've got a really interesting story. The fact that you wear a lot of hats and you wear them well is very cool. And people can find where do you want people to go? If they're looking for you online, so that way they can get the best viewpoint of all the things you've got going on.
Charity is hopeforthesold.com, the documentary redlightgreenlightfilm.com, and then if they want to see the trailer for the book as well as download the first two chapters for free, it's livingprayerfully.com.
Awesome. Jared, thanks so much for joining me this week on the Productivityist Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Well, there you have it. Thanks to Jared for joining me this week on the podcast. I'd love to hear from you and hear your thoughts on this show. So please drop me a line. You can send me an email at info@productivityist.com and Amy will take a look at it and then I'll grab it. She sends all the podcast stuff to me. So please do that. If you like the show, please rate, review it, give it an iTunes review. I'd love to hear more. We are currently working on, as of August, there's going to be some changes to the podcast, especially to those who are sponsoring the Patreon side of things. There's going to be bonus episodes and all that kind of stuff. If you want to become a Patreon supporter and want to support the show in a monetary fashion, just go to patreon.com/productivityist. There's a ton of perks now. There will be even more going forward. And I'd love to have your support on that side of the equation as well. If you're so inclined to do so, I'd love to have you. So thanks so much for joining me this week. And until next week, stop guessing and start going. Take care.